Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
As soon as we put the outfits on, quote, we look like gas oven popcorn.
Right on that Hoover, that was!
Yuckity-yuck, McMannequin.
The British Bulldog is part of the new generation.
You may all bow before T-Mabel!
Here it comes the jackknife!
On lives the new generation and the World Wrestling Federation.
Welcome, everyone, to the Cultaholic Classic Raw review as the other Cultaholic lads get themselves ready for the Super League of Football. We are here via our Ica Pro Power DeLorean, where there is nothing super, with the exception of maybe the odd Shawn Michaels match in 1995. But who be we? I be Fake Geordie, a radio presenter without portfolio, former Cultaholic heavyweight champion, the advocate for Pablo Tom Campbell. I am with the bear in the big blue bar cage. He is the head pen. He is Titan Shrugged of Cultaholic, the man who does not require a pencil. He needs a pen. He gets it right every time. He is Justin Henry, and he is from off of America.
You know, what I'm hoping for is the DVD or documentary release of the Super League years from now, where they talk about how they did everything ethically, how the people demanded it, how they were helping themselves and not hurting the other guy.
Where's my football? Actual football.
Hey.
I'm kidding. It's all friendly. The Super League stuff. Time of recording. It's very hot on the news. My Twitter trending this morning on the day of recording was Super League, and then the word embarrassed, and then the word ashamed.
You know, I had a thought. Getting back to your prior joke, which I know is a joke and I'm not offended, but if the Premier League was so great, wouldn't Tony Khan's Fulham club play an annual game in the United States the way his pro football Jacksonville Jaguars play a game in England every year?
I mean, it's a good shout. It's a good shout. I mean, there are teams from the Premier League that do sometimes play in America, but it's only if they get lost. My brother went to America to watch Orlando play West Bromwich Albion one time. That was a thing that happened. I think he was one of 12 fans that flew from West Bromwich to watch the game. But you got the weather, didn't you? You make a holiday of it.
You know me, I'm just busting balls.
I agree.
I love the gridiron game, but I mean, here I thought I had a problem with them adding a 17th game to the schedule, thus busting up the symmetry. I'm like, what greed? What unfettered greed? And I look at you guys, I'm like, oh, that's really...
Hold my pint! Off we go! It's impressive.
And it is a monument to the avarice.
It truly is. And they should all be proud and horrified at themselves all at the same time. So, hey, look, we can't talk about this because this is happening in 2021. We're not here to talk about 2021. We're here to go way back to the year 1995. That is where we currently are on our schedule for Monday Night Raw, as Justin Henry and I chronologically critique, thank you OSW Review, the entirety of Monday Night Raw from its very beginning. We are two years into Monday Night Raw at this point, and the game is about to change. And Justin's going to talk us through this week's episode of Monday Night Raw in just a moment. Where and when are we this week, Justin?
Well, I mean, the game ain't changing this week. This is week two of a TV taping. It aired Monday, June 12th, 1995. We are still at the high school in Sally Struthers, Ohio.
It's a beautiful location.
It's beautimous, as a certain macho individual might say.
It's beautimous! So the game, yeah, you're right. The game isn't changing this week, but whoa! Is there something on the horizon?
As we first put wrestling on Turner Network many years ago, it's been exciting entertainment programming for all our viewers. World Championship Wrestling has always been one of our most popular programs. The Braves have become a winning team in baseball. CNN is the leader in world's news and information. And now WCW is about to dominate the globe in professional wrestling.
For the wrestling world, taking a look at the Wrestling Observer for this week. And David Meltzer tells us, in a stunning move, stemming from a meeting between Eric Bischoff and Ted Turner, which we talked about last week, WCW will be adding a new television show every Monday night, going head up with Monday Night Raw on the TNT cable network, starting on the 7th of August. The show, as yet unnamed, will air live, probably in a similar setting as Raw. A live show every third week, tapes from taping in between.
He's a little off on those details.
A little bit, because that's not exactly how it pans out, is it?
No, because I can tell you right now, the reason why they went from August 7th to September 3rd or September 4th was just to have that one unopposed week while Raw was away due to the U.S. Open.
So that's why.
That was by design.
Ah, they know what they're doing. They know what they're doing. Well, to talk a little bit more about what we know. So the idea, as we've said, comes from a meeting between Eric Bischoff and Ted Turner. We talked about this meeting on the last episode when you and I were together, Justin. Was it the week before? Everything blurs into one. And
last time week, is a, it was last week.
It was last week. I was worried that time had become a construct again. But this is, and this is quite the development today. There have been already reports floating around that the new show will be called WCW Head to Head. I mean, very on the nose as names goes, is it not, Justin?
I'm making my skeptical face.
It is my favorite skeptical face. If we don't get that on a sticker by the end of the year, I'll be livid. A decision won't be made on the new show until later on this week. Now, Justin, you were a wrestling fan, deeply entrenched in the world of the wrestling at this time.
Barely.
Somewhat toe dipped in the wrestling at this time. Did you catch any wind of this as it was all kicking off?
I probably first heard of it either like a Clash of the Champions or an episode of Saturday Night that aired in that summer. It's probably where I would have first heard of it, and it didn't really make much of a difference to me. Like oh cool, more wrestling, and I wasn't super jazzed up, but when I saw that first show, I knew I had seen an event.
So you knew that. I mean, it's a monumental thing when you look back on it. Obviously now what we know, but it's intriguing times ahead. That's all we know at this point about this new show. I reckon next week in the Observer we'll have a little bit more meat on the bone for what to expect, at least from what Dave has to tell us.
I could tell you how Nitro got its name.
Oh, go on.
We see at the time TNT had the rights to air half of the NFL's Sunday evening schedule. For the first half of the season, from September through end of October, about 8 or 9 games in all, and that was, and in the billing that was called Sunday Nitro, so they figured if they want to call the wrestling show Monday Nitro, have a Nitro twin bill and use the NFL connection to bring fans over to wrestling.
So it was a way of sort of connecting the football fans and the wrestling fans and the existing audience and bringing them over.
A little blue-collar synergy.
I like that. And it's funny how the name that was devised to lean off another franchise would become sort of the franchise leader.
Mm-hmm. A lot of people thought it was because Nitro is so fast, sounds like Night Raw. Monday Nitro.
Yeah, and Raw. Like,
a lot of people thought that, but that wasn't quite the case.
No. Well, that's good to know. For imparting name facts, I will impart some name facts on you later in the podcast. Ho ho! That's a hook and a tease.
Oh no!
Ho, ho! Oh yes, mate. Oh mate, there's a part of this podcast that lasted the show lasted about 30 seconds. I've got about 400 words on it. Just awarded.
Sounds good.
I'm excited. That's the big bit of wrestling news. Just a lot of injuries in the WWF to talk about as well. So Diesel is expected to work King of the Ring. Not coming back until then. He's still very much in a bad way. Not the only one who's suffering. Roddy reportedly with a staph infection in his knee. He's not coming back until King of the Ring. Razor Ramon has bruised his ribs. He took a bump off the ladder off a ladder at the Nassau Coliseum just a few days before this. He immediately got sent home. He is off the road. He's missing the weekend. And it's a question mark for King of the Ring at this point. And it's not the end of the injuries because Tatanka's knee is bad as well. But he carried on working. What a trooper. Hey, it's like Diesel out, Roddy out, Ramon out, Tatanka injured, but carries on.
He's the only one in the group that worked WrestleMania 32, so he's pretty tough.
He is a tough boy. Owen Hart suffered a concussion on the 11th of June at the Meadowlands. He was in a tag match against the Smoking Guns. Refused to get checked after the show, which is ridiculous to think of now. Last word I heard, says Dave, was the 1-2-3 Kid was expected back sometime in July. So at the time where the roster is already like wather thin, you've got quite a few injuries doing the rounds already.
And I think with this show, you kind of see, well, you don't really see it because this was taped a while ago, but you kind of get an idea of how bad it could be because there ain't much on this show that's really worthwhile with a lot of top of the card ambition.
Yeah. Lack of ambition is accurate.
it's not a good time for this company at all.
But we soldier on regardless. And we go to Justin Henry, who is going to talk us through this week's episode of Monday Night Raw. Quite a few notes on different things for this episode. So I thought we'll keep the top bit a little bit tight and sweet and short and bright. And we'll throw it straight to Justin to talk us through a Monday Night Raw.
Tonight, for the first time on international television, Lex Luger, the embodiment of the American spirit, will face the monstrous Yokozuna. At stake, the final position in the King of the Ring tournament. But more importantly, tonight, an athlete and indeed a nation's pride is on the line as Lex Luger attempts to show Yokozuna yet again the American dream is alive and well. However, two summers ago, Yokozuna insulted America on her birthday on board the USS Intrepid. No one could body slam the then 568-pound offender until Lex Luger arrived. It was the body slam heard round the world, which catapulted Lex Luger's call to action campaign. The Lex Express was on the move and would finally stop at SummerSlam 93 for the showdown with Yokozuna and for the WWF title. Lex Luger would nail Yokozuna, knocking him through the ropes to the outside, and Lex Luger would win the match but would not win the title. However, tonight, both men are on a collision course for a chance at a title of a different sort. Both men would like to be the King of the Ring, but only one will qualify tonight.
Lex Luger, the showdown's been a long time coming, but Yokozuna has to beat you tonight to qualify for the King of the Ring. Only one man can be the king, so you'll be the pawn tonight on Monday Night Raw.
Yokozuna, this showdown between you and I is long overdue. It goes all the way back to the Intrepid. You constantly trying to embarrass and humiliate America comes to an end when we meet right here tonight on Monday Night Raw.
Okay, so we start out with a video.
It's always good when Justin starts with a sigh. It's gonna be a good one.
I believe I messaged you yesterday and warned you about a certain part of this show.
Oh, you did, my friend. And you know what? You were right to warn me.
I'm just the one who yells back to Tom, like, you gotta see this.
I'm excited, mate.
So we start out with a hype video for Luger and Yokozuna tonight. It is the final King of the Ring qualifier, we think. We're told in the voiceover that Luger is the embodiment of the American spirit. Now, I don't want to criticize their writing, because that would just be pretentious of me. But when your American spirit can barely string together a promo with interest behind it, and 85% of his offense is just half-ass clotheslines, that's not really good for the American spirit, I don't think.
It doesn't fill me with American spirit. And I know I'm not the target audience for American spirit, but I feel that, I mean, what sucks is this video at the top, which is all very America, 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 America. It's all well and good sharing like the story of Luger slamming Yoko. What did it take to be a hero? And all this stuff. But Luger didn't win. Like, let's not forget that all this, you still have to go, Luger didn't win the title, but wasn't it fun?
Yeah, the gist of it is, well, Luger's choked before, but this time he could be in the King of the Ring tournament.
He promises not to choke again, Your Honor.
And then we get these show themed off camera stare promos where you see Yoko staring off into the distance while Cornette narrates. Because it's a typical corny promo about how Luger's going to get beat, blah, blah, blah. And then we get the Luger one where he's staring off into the yonder and says, it all comes to an end tonight. I'm almost excited for this match.
Just because it comes to an end tonight.
It's I feel the system kicking on just a little bit. I get the hamster into the wheel. but he's in like a chocolate coma. Come on, get up, get moving. Come on, get in the wheel. That's where I'm at with this show.
It desperately needs something. I mean, I like how they're. I mean, there is something quite special. Like, if you, I know it's said with like a tinge of sad, but there's something about the fact that it's a SummerSlam main event at the top of Raw this week. Like, it's not the greatest SummerSlam main event, but it's a SummerSlam main event for the top of Raw this week. They do everything in their power to make it feel like it's a big thing. And you know what? If it wasn't so crap, it would be America versus Yokozuna.
It could have been Taker versus Taker.
I mean, there is that. If for the King of the Ring, like, how desperate are you if for the King of the Ring talent, if you're color palette swapping Undertaker for one of the rounds?
Just do a mishmash of errors. The Ultimate Warrior versus Zeus. I'm sad we never got that match.
Incidentally, I'll give it a plug in case you missed it from Sunday. Myself and Alison Pregler, a.k.a. Obscurus Looper from Movie Nights, we watch No Holds Barred. It's a lovely watch along waiting for you on the podcast feed. Since you mentioned Zeus, thought I'll get that little sneaky plug in.
How'd you enjoy it?
Brilliant fun. My God, executive producer Hulk Hogan is the four words I would describe it as.
Someone pointed out that limo driver that Hogan made crap himself. Doesn't he look just like Richard Belzer?
I never thought of that. I can see it now. What did occur to me, and I don't know whether this occurred to you, like in No Holds Barred, Rip has like a small, frail, younger brother who, like, is just a bit of a wuss, keeps getting beaten up.
What's his name?
Randy. You bastard. Hogan, you bastard.
This was a vanity project of all vanity. This was the wrestling room.
All we needed was for Zeus to say, you're my favorite customer.
Oh, hi, Mark.
Oh, hi, Marks.
You are tearing me apart, Linda.
John. Tommy Wahogan, make it happen.
You're my favorite no seller. Hi, doggy.
I did not hit her. I did not, brother.
Of course not, brother. I don't work snug.
He works very snug in that film. There's one point where he's got no pants on.
Wasn't that the other movie that he was in?
Oh, I know the one you mean, and I've not seen it because I'll be sick.
I'm just saying it's not very artful.
Certainly worth dodging.
So back to unpleasant reality, which, not to say that wasn't unpleasant unto itself. Bob Backlund is now campaigning somewhere. We don't know where. I'm not sure he knows where. He's just a wandering campaign machine at this point. And we learned that Lawler's going to show us his training video tonight. Spoiler alert, it is a metaphor for this company.
Good shout. Good bloody shout. I think you're right as well.
But we begin with action. Bam Bam Bigelow versus Dwayne Gill. And one of these men would go on to hold gold in this company. It's not who you think.
Dwayne Gill here, looking like an acid-washed Spike Dudley, I put in my notes.
He really does.
Yeah.
Got trimmed up the hair a little bit. Still very pale. Although sadly, Bigelow did not send him flying into the fifth row.
that'll be in many years to come.
Oh, poor Spike. Spike got some hang time, too.
He really did. He really did.
Vince already stretching the truth when he says that Bigelow has really been on fire as of late.
In the sense that he has fire on his tights.
Right.
No lies detected.
So now fire shoots out of Bam Bam's back, I should point out. Apparently he's having hot flashes in reverse. And Vince tells us it's going to be hotter than Hades at the King of the Ring. Or you'll just wish you were in hell, one or the other. So it's during this match that Diesel calls in. And now, what we said before about how Diesel looks vulnerable, too vulnerable for his own good.
I've gone pathetic here. He says, pathetic.
All right, Tom, this is what we're going to do.
Okay.
You're going to be John Cena or Steve Austin or Hulk Hogan or any other super confident babyface champion.
Right.
And I'll be Vince.
All right. I've already cut the promo in my head, so I'm ready for this.
Okay. It's like, hey, well, insert name. You're suffering from the effects of a terrible elbow injury and you've had surgery on it. You have a big match coming up in 2 weeks. Are you going to be 100%?
Do you know what? I am already 100%, Vince. I am 100% ready to kick Sid Vicious's ass. I am 100% ready to show you why I'm the leader of the new generation of the World Wrestling Federation. I am 100% ready to stand next to Bam Bam Bigelow in the center of the ring at the King of the Ring and put Sid Tatanka and that million-dollar corporation down. If I had one arm, two arms, no arms, I would be there in the center of the ring. Doesn't matter about how I'm feeling. I'm 100% ready to break Sid Vicious. That's what you do.
Good job, Tom.
Thank you, mate. Thank you.
Now, you be Vince. I will be Big Daddy Cool.
All right, Diesel, coming up, you're facing Sid at the King of the Ring. You've got a fixed bad arm and all that jazz. Will you be 100% for the King of the Ring?
Well, it's not 100%. I'll level with you. But you know what? I have obligations. I'm a professional. I'm still going to be there. It ain't going to look good, but I'm going to try. And I just hope that people don't ask for refunds. I hope I can do good enough to where they feel like they got their money's worth out of watching me and throw hands with a guy who doesn't know what planet he's on. And his partner's working through a bad knee. You got to understand, we're big, tough guys. We really are. But gosh darn it, the schedule you have us on, Vince, it's really toiling to all of us. And I'm going to try. I had the belt. You're paying me more than anybody else, which, joke's on you. But it's, I'm going to do my best.
Isn't he pathetic?
That was basic. Now, I may have taken some creative liberties with what he said.
Not a lot, though. Not a lot of creative liberty, because you sort of nailed the vibe that he was giving us, which was, oh, no, I'm not 100%, but, oh, well, I guess I'll be there. I'm turning the corner with his elbow, but I'll be there.
I figured the problem out.
Okay.
See, Vince wanted a new Hogan, and he decided that the closest thing he had was a 7-foot giant who was known for having a dry sense of humor. And a dry manner of speech because he's very intelligent and doesn't have to raise his voice. Along the way, he realized, oh my God, he's bigger than everybody else. We can't get heat on him because he's bigger than everybody else. We have to make him human, even though he is a friggin' giant.
Why do you have to make him human, though?
Like, here's the thing. Hogan, for all of his foibles, he was also 6'8" and 300 pounds, but he knew how to elicit sympathy. He was good at that. Hogan knew how to work a crowd and make even a smaller opponent like Randy Savage or whoever, Paul Orndorff. Just name any opponent he's had that's small, Kurt Hennig, who's smaller than him, and make them look like a freaking world beater when they have him at, and he's at their mercy. Hogan could sell for them. He was great at it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Kevin Nash, I like Kevin Nash, does not have that magic. That is the starkest difference between Hogan and Nash. Hogan was Superman, but he made you believe that every heel he went up against had some form of kryptonite that could have him vulnerable for a little while, and it was believable. Nash, you have to manufacture reasons for him to be behind the eight ball, because he can't make that same connection that Hogan can.
But it's like, there's a better way of doing it. There's a better way of doing it.
Oh, sure there is. I agree.
Million better ways of doing it. Like having him play this, oh, my arm hurts, but I'll be there. I'm a big boy. Like, that's bollocks. I'm so leader of the new generation. Hogan would have done a line and he'd have shouted at the camera that wasn't there that he was going to be in the Omni, despite the fact that it's not in the Omni.
Don't kill me, make one more strong, brother.
Yeah, exactly. Like, geez, it was just, I'd have rather Diesel not been mentioned on the show at all, rather than this call in. Because I think this actually does more damage to Diesel than him not being on the show.
Just be like a Clint Eastwood character, and it's like, you got part of me, but you didn't get all of me.
Yeah, this, oh my, see, we've sat here and bounced back and forth so many better lines that he could, including a literal one from Hulk Hogan, that he could have used instead of going, oh, I'll be there, I guess, my armor's a bit, but I'll be all right. Christ. Diesel.
Nobody wants to hear Darth Vader go, no.
yeah, exactly. That's this. The same energy. Dwayne Gill brings the energy in the match, by the way. He's brilliant here.
Yeah, Dwayne Gill's working hard. Bam Bam is Bam Bam Bam. He misses a leaping headbutt, but catches Gill off the top, slams him down. Diving headbutt finishes. It was all just a backdrop to that depressing phone call. So Bigelow wins. He's building momentum toward King of the Ring. But more importantly than that, we come to the one truly great moment of the entire show. And I was goddamn excited to see this. We have a debut vignette for one of the most underrated characters of all time. The one and the only, Waylon Mercy.
Lives are going to be in Waylon Mercy's hands. You know what I mean?
So if you've never seen Waylon Mercy, he's basically based on the portrayal of Max Cady, Robert De Niro's character from Cape Fear, the 1991 version. There's a little bit of Robert Mitchum from the 62 version also, but he's more De Niro in terms of how he's dressed with the jet black hair and the Hawaiian shirt. This is basically the precursor to Bray Wyatt in so many ways. And he hits this really creepy Southern accent that sounds peaceable, but there's a very clear, sinister undertone to it.
It's Waylon Mercy again. Out here enjoying this peaceful surroundings, enjoying nature, enjoying these insects, enjoying this worm. But you know something? I enjoy worms, but I don't enjoy worms crawling on me. Just like when I get in that wrestling ring, I don't like wrestlers touching me, and I definitely don't want them crawling on me. And if they do so, I'll tell you what's going to happen. They're going to get smooshed just like this worm. You know what I mean?
He's sitting on this rock pile, like this beach jetty. Like, Waylon Mercy here. Just sitting around being peaceable. They got this love nature, love all the little critters. Got this little worm crawling on my arm. I don't like when bugs crawl on me. And I don't like when the wrestlers crawl on me. And if they do so, they're going to get squashed like this little bit of old worm. And he smacks his arm. And then flashes this creepy grin at the camera and goes, you know what I mean?
Amazing.
He is horrifying.
He is absolutely brilliant here. Absolutely brilliant.
Yeah, Waylon Mercy thought he was a babyface, but he was actually a heel. That was the point of the character.
It was something that Bruce Pritchard mentioned on Something to Wrestle. Mm-hmm. When he talked about this character, Bruce Pritchard genuinely believes that if Waylon Mercy had come along 10 years earlier, he'd have been wrestling Hulk Hogan. That's the words of Brucey. And I get it. Like, it's that amazing, sinister character. The work that the Waylon Mercy did.
Mm-hmm.
But all of this, as great as the character was, one of the big reasons behind this character was not just to do something different with Dan Spivey, but also to kind of mask a little bit of where Dan Spivey's at physically, because he's not in it. Like, we're getting Dan Spivey quite late in his career. He's been part of the WWF before. He replaced Wyndham in the US Express in the late 80s. Golden Boy Danny Spivey for a brief period. Everybody thought he was just a Hogan photocopy. So that's the sort of shape this lad used to be in. I found a lot of tag team partners. I'm just getting a little rundown of the career of Danny Spivey here. For many tag teams from the WWF, he replaced Rick Steiner in the Varsity Club, Stan Hansen in All Japan. He formed two versions of the Skyscrapers in WCW, first with Sid Vicious, then another with me and Mark Callis. What happened to him? He was in Herb Abrams' Coke-powered wrestling endeavor. The UWF became the company's only America's champion before signing back with WWF as well. And as you say, directly linked to Cape Fear, this guy is. And it's a shame that we didn't get this character and the Dan Spivey from the 80s, because that would have just been an unstoppable combo.
I'm going to watch Cape Fear later today because I haven't seen it in years.
I watched
Counselor,
Robert De Niro.
Could you be there? Come out wherever you are. De Niro playing a backwoods hick, and it's a total creep who figures out how the law works and how to manipulate people and uses to torment his old lawyer is brilliant.
I think he's stunning in whatever he does, but I am a massive fan of what he does in anything. I watched Joker for the first time yesterday, and it was a lovely surprise to see him in it.
Well, that was a callback to King of Comedy.
It was, and I appreciate it. Yeah, I appreciated it. It was a nice little touch having him involved in it.
Yeah, but Mercy is kind of nailing the vibe here, and he admitted that he did watch Cape Fear to try and get that De Niro vibe. I was waiting for him to go, I ain't no white trash piece of shit. I'm better than all of you.
F in the chat, by the way, for the worm that died during that promo.
Pour one out.
Okay, pour one out for the worm that died in the promo. Mm.
So we go from that bit of brilliance to it's a bird, it's a plane, it's the WWF blimp. You know what this is?
Go on.
This is like putting the adult bookstore next to the Six Flags.
This is a company in transition, isn't it? It still is. Where they're like, we want to kind of make things a little bit cooler, but we're still for the family. Look at the blimp.
This is a buffet table that puts the Capri Sun next to the tequila.
That's a happy mix-up to have, though.
Sure is. So we actually get tour dates for where you could see the blimp.
Just look up.
And I was like, they mentioned Fenway Park. They mentioned other sporting venues. It's like, if the blimp is a bigger draw than the wrestlers, that would be the true embodiment of the 1995 spirit.
Mate, I think if there'd been another injury, they probably would have put the blimp in the King of the Ring tournament.
They did. He won. Sorry, he is 500 pounds.
He's a big lad. He is a big lad.
whatever. So just when you think we couldn't get any more 1995, we get this delightful backstage segment.
This made my day.
The Smoking Guns, as in the guy who won the Brawl for All and Austin Gunn's dad, are playing Pogs.
Yes, they bloody are, mate.
But they can't call them Pogs. They have to call them Milk Caps because Pog is trademarked.
Mm-hmm.
Now, for those of you who... Now, I can't make fun of it because I had Pogs as a kid because I was right in that perfect age bracket.
Same.
Pogs are these little cardboard Milk Caps that you stack up and then you hit them with a metal or plastic slammer and see how many you can turn over. And whatever you turn over, you keep. And you go back and forth with a friend to see who can get the most.
Would you like the history of Pogs?
I'll take the condensed version, please.
Okay, I'll do what I can. Because condensed milk. Now, Pogs / Milk Caps possibly originated during the 20s. Some say it goes back to the 17th century because there's a Japanese card game called Menko, which is very similar to how Milk Caps is played. So they are basically Milk Caps that played as Pogs the way that Justin described there. New packaging made cardboard Milk Caps obsolete in the 50s. So manufacturers like Halakala Dairy and Orchards of Hawaii would distribute the caps as promotional items because despite the fact that people still played them that way, they were still very popular, despite the fact that they were no longer used as Milk Caps, essentially. When Halakala Dairy used the caps to successfully promote the introduction of a fruit drink, it led to a surge in similar promotions in Milk Cap collecting. So what happened is Halakala Dairy started making a special orange-flavored drink that had these caps on that were highly collectible. That drink was the Passion Orange Guava drink, abbreviated as POG. And that is where POG comes from.
Indeedy.
Yes, it was revived in the 90s, and this comes down to a teacher in Oahu called Blossom Galbiso. She was a teacher and a guidance counselor from the area, and she introduced the game to her students that she used to play as a kid as not only a way of teaching maths, but also a non-violent game for the schoolyard. It spread across the state. It spread across the country, eventually made its way around the entire world from there, and it became the phenomenon that we are playing and watching today that is Milk Cap / Pog. Now, you can't call it Pog because seven other companies entered the Milk Cap field following a comic book and industry convention in January of 93. And the term Pog was trademarked shortly after that by the World Pog Federation. Other companies said, you can't trademark it. It's a generic term. We're going to be Pogs as well. We're going to be the Universal Pogs Association. We'll just call ourselves the Pog Company. However, it went to court and POG was recognized as World POG's exclusive terminology and all the other places had to start changing the names, hence why Milk Caps came back, hence why these are Mad Caps or Matt Caps, Slammers and such like that. And it's because the word POG was disputed as not being a word that was for everybody, but a word that somebody could own, and therefore they did. It ended up getting banned from a lot of schools, and it was the same in my school. I don't know whether it was yours, Justin, because a lot of teachers believed that POGs encouraged students to gamble.
Do what now?
This is what happened in my school because POGs were banned because obviously, as you explained, in the rules of POGs.
No, I heard you, but who is betting on POGs?
No, it's the fact that you bet by virtue of the fact that when you strike the POG, the ones you flip over, you keep.
For keeps then, okay.
So the idea being that, you know, if I brought in 30 POGs and I stacked all my 30 up and then Richard Haywood from my maths class, who was a prick, came over and smashed the POGs, all 30 of them, flipped all over. He'd keep all my POGs. And I'm all sad because I've lost all my POGs. And
that's part of life.
I know, but I was being protected. And when my parents kicked up, no, they didn't. but it's the idea that the teachers went, it encourages gambling. We're going to take this away. That's what happened in my school. And apparently it happened in lots of other places as well.
You know who had WWF POGs?
You did.
Me.
Yeah, boy. Where are they?
I have no idea where they're at as of right now. I may have gotten rid of them years ago. I couldn't tell you.
Oh.
Ocean City Boardwalk in New Jersey, 1990, summer of 95. I bought a few of them with some of my allowance money and had like 15 of them in all. I know I had Sean. I had Mantar. I had a Mantar POG.
Oh.
I don't know if I call myself the proud owner, but yes, I had one.
I cheated because I got bought a milk cap maker.
I had that too.
Yeah, you made your own. So you cut up WWF magazine and you go, yeah, I've got a Hulk Hogan Pog. How cool I am.
So you have Billy and Bart playing this game backstage while Barry Dudinsky watches because he's selling it. And meanwhile, there is someone lingering around who is called the Mad Capper.
Yeah, I was baffled as to who this was.
It's just some guy in a top hat and like a magician's cape. Just hanging around.
A random
nobody.
For no
adequately explained reason other than the fact that he is the Mad Capper. I want to learn more about this guy.
Yeah, I'm intrigued. I typed in Mad Capper and I couldn't find anything.
That's nobody I know.
No.
So you can also buy the Just Slam It shirt, which is a good thing to wear while you're getting hung upside down in the boys' bathroom at elementary school while they're giving you a swirly, all the big kids. And I should point out that even Vince and Lawler know how dumb this shirt is because they bury it.
Vince doesn't know what a slammer is.
No. So, yeah, WWF milk caps, collect them.
You bastard.
Catch the milk cap magic and then let us know where you found it.
Look very carefully for the milk cap magic. Good luck finding the milk cap magic.
You may need a black light.
That's a special kind of milk cap magic. God!
I didn't mean it that way.
I did.
You're a very cheeky man.
I am the cheekiest boy.
Well, enough fun. Time for karma.
Sorry.
It's okay.
Karma always gets you in the end.
Karma versus David Haskins.
I'm excited because I thought this might have been Mark Haskins' dad, who is a famous British wrestler who's very, very good. He's in Ring of Honor now. And he's from Malvern in Worcestershire, which is just up the road from where I used to live. And I was like, is it? And it's not. So that's my story on David Haskins. He wasn't someone I knew's dad.
Isn't Worcestershire where they make the steak sauce?
It is indeed, mate. And where I used to live, I used to get the train. My first radio job, I used to get the train at 5:30 in the morning from Worcester Shrub Hill to a town called Kidderminster. And I'd have to walk past the Lee and Perrins Worcestershire Sauce Factory every time I get that train. And no word of a lie, people say stuff like this, it's quite hyperbolic. It's not, in this case, it is true. The whole place smelled like Worcestershire sauce.
Mm.
It's true. If you love the smell of Worcestershire sauce, then my advice would be to find a little house near Shrub Hill Station because it will smell like that all the time.
Dude, you could live there and be a vegan.
I mean, that there is that.
I'd be abducting cows if I got desperate enough and just slaughtering them myself.
Yeah, just take a bite out of a, like, just in running into fields and just sprinkling the sauce.
Need steak.
Nom, 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 nom.
So, Vince at one point, because Com isn't part of the tournament coming up in 2 weeks. God forbid when we get to that crap. Vince says, imagine King Comma.
No. Thought,
catchphrase King Comma?
Is that what? I'd like to think that's what you meant, but I doubt it.
Yeah. A young Ross Twiddell was got his first ever Ross shout out.
The end was nowhere near nigh at this point.
Well, no. I don't know. It's hard not to think that. So we have an important Raw debut during this match. There's a lot of debuts on this show, I noticed.
Okay. So,
while Kama's getting ready to kick David Haskins' ass, two individuals shrouded in black, the precursor to the Creatures of the Night, leave a black wreath at ringside and then sit in the front row and proceed to imitate Thunderdome fans by not moving at all.
I liked it a lot.
These are Undertaker messengers. One of whom appears to be a young Martin Landau.
Oh, no, is it? No.
No.
Martin, I was going to say.
Martin Landau was like in his 70s here. he was busy winning the Oscar for Ed Wood and give me many quotes that I would quote for years after the fact. All right, let's shoot this fucker. Anyway, so we get some karate-like offense from Kama. I'm not comfortable calling it just karate. It's got to be karate-like. Haskins does do the Marty Jannetty clothesline sell off of a lariat by doing the midair cartwheel.
Nice little move.
Vince does a drop in for Mr. Mom, a Michael Keaton movie, which before he did Birdman, he did that.
Yeah, that was a nice little shout for Mr. Mom. What's your favorite Michael Keaton film?
Batman 89.
That's the right answer.
Although Night Shift is second. Either that or Batman Returns. Like that, that's my top three.
I like him in The Founder.
Good shout.
But Batman 89 is the one.
Don't say Multiplicity.
Okay. I wasn't planning to, I promise, Your Honor.
Good.
Although we are forgetting him in Beetlejuice.
Oh, that's true. Shit.
He was stunning in Beetlejuice. God, Michael Keaton's bloody brilliant, isn't he?
Yes, he is.
Take a moment just to appreciate Michael Keaton.
Absolutely. Although Batman 89 is how I first heard of him, and that's how I always remember him.
1995 Michael Keaton movies. What did he have coming out in this year? I'm just going to quickly do a little filmography to see what else we could have been plugging.
While you're doing that, let me just finish up this match here. Commodus wins with a simple belly to belly. Then he yells at the creatures who sit there motionless. Apparently they're auditioning to be WWE announcers. And then he knocks the wreath down. Well, this means war now.
Oh, no. Nothing in 95. In 94, he did The Paper and Speechless. And then in 96, he did Multiplicity. So this wasn't the...
This was a down period.
It was the blurst of times for Michael Keaton at this point.
Was 93 My Life?
It was. And Much Ado About Nothing.
Yeah. In My Life is... if you're very emotionally... If you're easily emotional, you might want to steer clear of that one.
Mm, is it a rough ride?
A little bit.
Oh my God, I had no idea that he was Ken in Toy Story 3.
Really?
I had no idea.
Was that his comeback?
Before that, he did The Merry Gentleman. So it very well could have been.
So yes.
I think he might have done. Yeah, he looked like he went through a bit of a rough patch until Toy Story 3 came along.
It happened to Travolta until Pulp Fiction came along and saved him.
Oh, he is. Oh, mate. 2022, The Flash, starring Michael Keaton as Bruce Wayne / Batman.
What? It's the first I've heard of this.
That's the thing that's happening. He's coming back. The end is nigh. Run away. The end is nigh.
Oh, good. He finally beat up Affleck.
Oh, my God. They're bringing him back as Batman. That's amazing. Right. Oh, let that spot. Be a thing. Yeah.
Best Batman ever. Who played him?
Best Batman. Adam West.
Good answer.
It's the safe answer, Adam West. Yeah. I'll get you, Adam Wee.
All right. I'll put another way, Keaton or Bale?
Keaton.
I might go Bale.
Bale's all right. I think Keaton still is my boy as Batman. I like Michael Keaton. Adam West, Michael Keaton. Affleck or Clooney? Oh, Christ. You want shit with that or vomit? Can I just have the salad? No, you have to choose one. Okay.
Is Kilmer dead last?
Oh God, Batman's been through the ringer, hasn't he?
It was all down. It was down until Bale saved it.
I'll go. Okay, so we'll go West, Keaton, Bale.
We're stalling than usual this week.
Yeah, we're doing great. West, Keaton, Bale. West, Keaton, Bale. Clooney, Kilmer. Oh God! Actually, Clooney's not terrible. He is. I mean, I don't
never
know.
Leave the cave without it.
that's more like he just was just given bollocks, and just had to do what he did. Like, I can't 100% blame him for the bat.
All I can think now is just a bat credit card. They had the balls. No, No, does not compute. So, anyway, let's go from bad to worse off of that. So that was a good setup to the King of the Ring report.
Yeah, it's perfect.
Diesel Bigelow versus Sid Tatanka, which Todd says has the balls to say is going to be incredible. I guess it's incredible that that's the main event, because that's how it's a sign of where we're at in 95. We get a Sid interview. I love these. He makes some movie reference to that. I can't remember what it was. I didn't bother writing it down.
I've got it written here. He made a reference to Here Comes Mr. Jordan from 1941.
So Sid's doing Goldust gimmick.
A little bit, yeah, a little bit. Now, thing is, right, when I heard that, I initially balked. Like, oh, God, Vince wrote this. But then we do forget that in 95, somebody referencing a movie from 41 is like somebody today referencing a movie from the 70s.
Depends what it is.
Like Deliverance.
And, you know,
Papillon.
Sid probably didn't suck here, because he talks about, like,
Superman.
How divine intervention saved the guy in the movie. But it's not going to save you, Diesel. That whispery tone. God and divine intervention will not save you. See, I like that. I like that, Sid.
That's a better Sid than what we have with Diesel. Like, Sid brings this sort of mystical nonsense to it. Whereas Diesel is like, I might be there. I don't know.
Sid's like the neighbor who turns on you one day.
Yeah, that's it. That's like, what he is, isn't it?
He seems nice, but he seems a bit unsettling. And then one day you look out your window and he's walking around naked in his backyard covered in blood. So it's like, oh, God, what happened? That's Sid.
That's it.
Get the plug for the Kiss My Foot match. Then we go to ringside and Lawler pulls out a gnarled prosthetic rubber foot. Because we have to have visual gags. Literally, gags. Then Todd back in the studio says, that's the worst thing he's ever smelled. Lawler's in the arena. Todd's in the studio.
Todd, it's all right. It's all right, Todd. You don't need to play that into it that much. It's okay. We know you're not next to him. It's fine.
And we get the brackets. Taker Mabel, Sean Kama, Bob Holly Roadie, and Razor Ramon tonight's winner. Jesus Christ.
It is the worst. They're putting a lot of effort, a lot of energy into the Lawler Hart thing. I've got a theory on that, but we'll get to it at the end of the show. I do have a theory.
A theory from Tom.
Mm-hmm.
Campbell's theory of relative crap.
Campbell's scoop.
Oh!
Leave me that as a segment every week. Put that on a sticker.
Scoop for the soul.
Oh, nice.
Meanwhile, Yoko is indulging. He's eating a big bowl of rice backstage to make himself heavier for the match. That was a strategy at the Intrepid. It didn't work. Can lightning not strike twice? We'll find out. So this next part kills me for some reason. We get the Tour de Force ad as read by Stephanie Wyand, the upcoming tour dates. Show in Germany tomorrow. She says, catch it tomorrow. How? This show's airing in America.
Get yourself over there quick. Get to see the house show immediately.
I'll climb into a missile silo.
Because Stephanie Wyand wouldn't have voiced it in that market.
No, it would have been...
Stephanie Weiss or something.
Putting on some Lederhosen in order to do this, in order to get in the character.
Guten Abend, die Welt Tour de Force. Do you know what the card was?
I'm afraid.
Do you know what? It's not. It's the best that we can do at this point, right?
Okay, so, that's not good.
So they had a night in Frankfurt and a night in Essen that I've looked at here. From Frankfurt, Jean-Pierre Lafitte versus Duke Drossi. Lafitte won. Men on a Mission beat the Head Shrinkers. They're really out of position here. Adam Bomb beat King Kong Bundy. Nice showing for Adam Bomb. Shawn Michaels, the top worker of the entire company, beat IRS. Smoking Guns beat the Blue Twins. Bret Hart beat Hakushi. And Undertaker beat Karma. So that's your card.
I want to see one of those matches.
Well, you might want to see the match they added to the Essen show, because that was the Frankfurt card. The Essen card was exactly the same, except they had one extra match. They had Alundra Blaze versus Bertha Faye for the Women's Championship.
So why couldn't you have that in Frankfurt?
Maybe they were traveling. Maybe they couldn't make it that night.
Maybe.
Maybe.
So, I mean, as bad as that sounds, what killed me here is she reads off the dates for four shows. Germany show, Sacramento.
Fail to see what the problem is. That seems perfectly reasonable.
If you want to see jet lagged restaurants, wrestlers, come to Sacramento. Everybody's walking around like zombies. It's the best 20-minute rest hold I ever saw. That was a show where Orange Cassidy decided I can do this for a living.
I could be jet lagged all the time. What a guy.
It was an impressionable moment for a young Orange.
And then if he wasn't sure, he'd just listen to Monday, he'd watch Monday Night Raw and listen to Diesel say, well, I'm not quite there, but I'm going to try. Aha! I have a gimmick.
That's right.
He's going to try. Lazy.
Man Mountain Rock versus the man with the best punches in the business, Bob Cook.
Oh, big Bob Cook in the house.
This match goes under a minute. Bob Cook gets in his trademark punches, but then falls victim to the whammy bar and submits.
I'm delighted they call it the whammy bar.
It's an okay name for
it. Because initially they didn't call it anything. And I was like, well, this is a weird finish. And then when they start calling it the whammy bar, I was like, yeah, I like that.
I'm still not as cool as the painkiller.
No, nowhere near as cool. But at least it's a I like a finisher name that is in keeping with the gimmick.
Not just that, but if you look at it, it actually physically resembles a whammy bar.
Yeah.
Because it's Fujiwara arm bar, and the way it works up and down.
And that's why the only thing it's missing, which I kind of wish he'd done, is as he's putting it on, Man Mountain Rock goes,
he should. Like he slash. Actually, what he should do, I saw a video once of Stevie Ray Vaughan playing guitar. He was doing a cover of Voodoo Child. The whammy bar falls off halfway through. He's still playing. He doesn't even notice it first. He realizes it's gone. He's still playing with one hand while picking up the whammy bar and reapplying it with the other hand. Like, he doesn't even miss a beat at all, because that's how good Stevie Ray Vaughan was. Like, I'm picturing like face a jobber, like a prosthetic arm. The guy's arm falls off. He keeps the hold applied while somehow reapplying the arm. I was picturing that. It makes no sense contextually, but it kind of does work like one.
I like it.
Thank you. Hall of Fame plug with Stephanie Wynn again. Enough with the Stephanie Wynn. So we learned about Antonina Rocca, Ernie Ladd, and Ivan Putski going in, or Putski, as she says. Now going in.
She can't do anything right in your eyes, can she? Like, no. I believe if she found a cure for world hunger, you'd be like, ah, it's a rubbish cure.
It's not her fault. She's just a fish out of water. if you've seen interviews with her, because James Dixon interviewed her for Titan Sinking, she's an intelligent person.
Yeah.
She's a film producer. She's done something in this world, and she just didn't fit here. It's just, we'll hire someone to do something about wrestling, and we'll train her from scratch. Like Adnan Virk right now. That's what they do. They don't want smart people. They want people they can train from scratch. Teach them our way to do everything. They get what they pay for.
Mm-hmm.
So, in addition to Rocca, Ladd, and Putski, we get the Fabulous Moolah has been announced for the Hall of Fame. With which Wyatt says in her voiceover, she exemplified grace and charm.
This is a segment that will not age well in years to come.
We'll see if that's on Peacock. I mean, I'm sure it will be, because it's not outwardly, like visually, an issue. Also added, Pedro Morales, the Grand Wizard, and Georgie Animal Steel. This is not an action figure class by any means.
No, I mean, don't get me wrong. I'd love a George, I'd love a George the Animal Steel action figure. That came, like, I want him with a mouth that chomped. Like, nang, 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 nang. So you could put him next to a toy ring and he could just chew on the turnbuckle pads.
He, like a Chucky doll that comes to life and just eats stuff around the house. Who ate the throw pillow?
Oh, George.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads, generally for most people, are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Bob Backlund is storming the hallways.
Where's Rock's dressing room?
This is where it all starts, right here.
Hey, he just dropped the guitar! Ooh, Bob Backlund just dropped Man Mountain Rock's guitar!
An accident.
Like, that was no accident!
That thing's slippery!
That was no accident
Rock,
at all!
The plebeians don't understand! They don't understand how their appetite grows! The layman can't tell! But I'm going to smarten them up, ladies and gentlemen. You are being surrounded by devious activity and noise that comes out of this so-called piece of machine. And I can't stand the effect that it has in our world. Our children can't think when they're in school anymore. They can't learn anything. They don't know how to read. And I can't stand people that play these kind of instruments and put this kind of mean, evil things in their minds. The crawling stones.
The what?
Frozen tea. Rolling rock. You are the people that have had a deleterious effect on our society. And it's all garbage.
Look at that.
Garbage.
Oh, wait a minute.
Garbage.
We just took out the cameraman.
He fell.
Unbelievable. Bob Backlund better get a hold of himself. Bob Backlund, what was that? The rolling rock and the crawling stones. He's not even in form. Well, watch. I'm going to go check on
I don't even know. Okay, I'm going to do my best here. Now, Bob Backlund is every out-of-touch administrator from every movie set in the 60s where rock and roll is banned.
He is the dad from Footloose.
Yes, perfect, perfect. I was gonna say Dirty Dancing, but it's but I'm gonna compare him to Jerry Orbach, first of all, because Jerry Orbach is awesome. It's a no one puts this empty crowd on the corner, but anyway. So he finds Man Mountain Rock's guitar in the hallway. He picks it up like he's handling a dirty sock from this somebody else's. He cuts his promo on rock music about the crawling stones and frozen tea. All right, first off, iced tea is a rapper, so we're doubly wrong here.
Yeah, that was a misstep. The crawling stones I quite liked.
Knocks the guitar over. It's the floor. It doesn't like shatter or anything. It's like nothing bad really happens to it.
He very delicately knocks it over.
Yeah, so this is clearly this was filmed in one take. He knocks down this camera creeper, like this big trunk thing. And he takes a bump off that, and the camera distorts.
He hits the ground after.
All right, I take back what I said about No Holds Barred being like The Room. This was like Tommy Wiseau's freak out in The Room. And everyone's against me.
I did not hit her. I did not.
Oh, hi, plebeian.
Beautiful.
This is the empty room. So that was that. And for a chaser to that.
Here we go.
This is.
Yes. Come on, Justin. Come on. Introduce it, damn it. Stop stalling. This is why we're here. It's the album art, for God's sake. This is.
I bet it is.
This is the album art.
This next match set a new standard for me questioning what I'm doing with my life. Techno Team 2000.
Yeah! Hey!
Versus the Miracle Jobber Connection duo of Mike Corey and John Crystal.
I call them the Short Alliance.
Well, we have to explain that.
Yes, we do.
We have to. So my first thing I wrote below the header for this was, oh God. Okay, Techno Team 2000 were allegedly men from the future. They were like spacemen, I guess. They had like the Mylar silver trunks, or tights, I should say.
Mm-hmm.
Similar vests. They were two tall lads. One is freaking Eric Watts. Eric Watts had a good look. He's about 6'5", 6'6". Lean, athletic build. If he wasn't Bill Watts' son, he might have done better in the business, but he's got that strike against him. He's not a terrible wrestler by any means. He's just wasn't worth the push they were, his dad was giving him 3 years earlier. So we got him, and we have former football player Chad Fortune, who looks like a giant Keanu Reeves.
like a slightly giant misshapen Keanu Reeves.
Mm-hmm. I know Kung Fu. But I don't know wrestling.
Now, they were mates. They were mates that go back a long while. Do you know this?
Fortune and Watts?
Yeah. So the story is that originally Chad Fortune and Eric Watts were football teammates at the University of Louisville. And they became a tag team in the AWA. Didn't really get very far with it. And Eric just kind of always gave Chad a little bit of a nip up. Like when Eric went to the WCW trade, went to do WCW stuff. He brought Chad with him. And then when he went to the WWF, he did stuff with
him. You know what? That's fine. And you know what? I can't blame WWF for giving them a try, because it's two tall, young guys, two good-looking guys,
mm-hmm.
clean cut, long hair, sort of had a cool look to them. But they gave him this gimmick.
Well, let me talk you through this gimmick, young sir.
Promise and try, Techno Team 2000.
So I listened to an interview that Eric Watts did with the Two-Man Power Trip in preparation for this day.
Okay.
And he talks very openly about him and Chad and Techno Team 2000 stuff. Get this, right? Chad Fortune has a pinfall victory over Goldberg.
And I was going to bring that up. He is the first man to ever beat Bill Goldberg in a match.
Yep, but there's no evidence. Because they decided, no, that isn't how it's going down. So when Eric left, so basically they're both in WCW, both got a bit bored. Eric got a tryout at the WWF, and he got Chad one as well, because Chad wasn't doing a whole lot in WCW. So Vince checked out the tape of Eric and Chad as a tag team in the tryout. Bloody loved them. Big lads doing high flying stuff. Eric said he couldn't sign quick enough, and Vince envisioned them as a futuristic tag team, which is what we got. WWE really, 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 really wanted this to work. Like, really did. They spent a fortune, pun intended, on the look for these guys, right? The ring attire was designed by a fashion designer from New York City. Eric said that on multiple occasions, he and Chad would get a limo from the nearest airport to the outlet in downtown New York City to get measured up and try on bits for different outfits and stuff. And the outfit was tweaked. They had boots made from a top end manufacturer in Texas. Despite all of this, all the love and care that went into designing this outfit, it was an outfit designed by a female designer. So had they been women, the look would have made more sense. And also, when the outfit arrived, it was the trousers were too short. Despite the fact they'd been measured, something was buggered up. So they got there on the day of their first match. The trousers were too short. So they had to wear knee pads over the top and boots that were a bit longer to hide the fact that they had short trousers on. Eric said, as soon as we put the outfits on, quote, we looked like gas oven popcorn, which isn't a far flung suggestion for what you look like. Now, they knew they were going to get new names. They didn't know what they were going to be until they had their first match. You know this part? Pick up the pace for this part.
Well, I don't know the story, but this I was going to mention here. They're basically playing two sort of intergalactic, futuristic kind of characters here. So you think they'd have names like Glabnor or something from like some distant galaxy. Travis and Troy.
Because the WWE loved names that had like a little, not a rhyme, but had like a
alliteration.
Alliteration to them. Love alliteration. They really did. But they didn't know what these names were until during their first house show match, the ring announcer came up and went, which one of you is Travis and which one of you is Troy? To which they flipped a coin to decide who was who. They hated both names and they went, we'll flip a coin. So they're their first match. It was a house show. And oh, mate, it went badly. Or it didn't go well.
You're kidding.
I know, right? Chad got stage fright. He botched everything on the first night. They got shipped to Memphis pretty soon after the match that we're going to see today. Chad was fired. Eric asked for his release. Vince sent Eric a FedEx containing his contract release and, should he change his mind, a brand new deal with a substantial raise. Vince really wanted to keep Eric Watts on the books.
We also got to understand at one point, Bill Watts does come into this company for a few months to be like Vince's right-hand man.
So that's why maybe, there's a keenness to keep them there.
Well, maybe more Eric than anything in order to keep Bill happier because Vince liked Bill or whatever.
Well, there was a lot of tension because of the Bill Watts thing and other parties. So there was a reason why I mentioned the Tour de Force card earlier because we mentioned Smoking Guns taking on the Blue Twins. Now, originally, the plan was Vince had asked somebody backstage to ask the Smoking Guns, can you guys give Techno Team 2000 your European tour tickets? Because we want to put them on the European tour and put you on the Canadian tour. And the Guns were livid because you make a lot of money on the European tour. And the fact they were being told to hand their tickets over. So Billy and Bart Gunn cried foul. They went to management and eventually it was decided instead that the Guns would do the European tour. There were plans for Techno Team 2000 to beat the Guns for the tag titles. Those plans were brushed away. That never occurred. And they just sort of squandered from there. And I think it says something in terms of how they're remembered by the WWE. In terms of, whilst I was researching Techno Team 2000, on WWE's YouTube channel, they are in a video list called WWE's Most Boring Tag Teams. A WWE written list called Most Boring Tag Teams.
Well, you gotta understand, a lot of them are written out of spite, especially that there's just like an axe to grind.
Oh yeah, there's a lot of grind in there. Jeez.
Now, all that said, so we talk about the sort of incomplete dorky outfits that the Techno Team had. That leads to my next theory. How do you make those outfits look cool? Well, you dress the people they're up against in something that is way worse.
Who likes short shorts?
Because we've seen Mike Corey and John Crystal before. They're just regular enhancement talents, usually wear like a singlet or regular trunks. They are wearing the shortest pair of Daisy Dukes you've ever seen wrestlers wear. Shorter than what Austin was wearing when he was like the co-GM in 2003. Shorter than that. Catherine Bach wouldn't wear shorts this short.
Shorts that, had they been any shorter, you'd have known what they'd had for breakfast.
They're any shorter, they'd be a collar. At this point in my notes, I wrote, what am I doing with my life?
I like an episode of Raw that just hits a bit different like that. Not so much you go, well, this is a bad episode, to the point where you go, I think I might get into an accountancy firm. I think I might be a bricklayer. Yes. I think that's the way to go. However, right, I like the fact that they're dressed the same. Like they feel like a legit tag team.
Yeah, they're coordinated. That's
if they'd wrestle two more matches, they'd have got trading cards.
What would the value of those cards be?
Oh, infinite, mate. Infinite. It'd be like those a are the Mew ones, in the
Pokemon. Those are the ones you put in the spokes of your bike once you make it sound like a Harley.
Mate, if I... John, I would like Crystal and Curry trading cards in my Harley, please.
Or in your Schwinn. Or Huffy. So it's an arm drag fest for a while. Watts throw some good arm drags. Arm drag city.
Arm drag city, bitch.
We get a double leapfrog spot, tandem hip toss. One hip toss, the other on the other. They're trying to be what the Eliminators are with innovative offense. Just hire the Eliminators.
I mean, that's the easy way of doing it.
I know they're shorter, but come on. One's Perry Saturn. So they mess... We get a spot. I think this was Watts. I didn't write down which one it was. He manages to screw up a double clothesline, although this could be the jobber's fault.
That was Watts. So it looked as if they were both coming in a bit close, but yeah. Watts just sort of crashes into them.
He ends up doing like a Vader attack into both of them at the same time. It's just to be clothesline both of them, one with each arm. But they were too bunched up, so it was it was what it was. We got a cool looking double spinning leg lariat at least. So that was fine. Elementary, but fine. So then Watts, I swear to God, on my mother's grave, this happened. Oh, she's alive. On the day she died, I will swear on her grave that this happened. Watts hit a reasonable drop kick.
It was a reasonable drop kick.
My jaw was on the desk. Like, no, that didn't happen.
I think because... Like, my notes here, I've just put lots of good ideas, but not much finesse.
No.
Like, they've got the best, like if you wrote down what they were doing, you think, oh, they sound cool. You know, which is why PWI liked them. They were like the top 10 tag teams in 95. But if you wrote down what they were doing, you're like, that's cool. But to watch it, it's not very crisp. It's not quite finished yet.
No.
If they were a cake, I'd be putting them back in the oven.
Good point. Fortune does finish off with a twisting, diving crossbody, which looked all right.
Mm-hmm.
I really got nothing to add to that. I think we've said it all.
Good ideas, just not quite as polished as they should be, or maybe that WWE want them to be. But my God, as we talked about earlier, they are keen to get these guys over. Like, they feel, Vince thinks this is where we're going. This is the future.
Well, enough of the chaser. Time for some turpentine.
Yay!
Man Mountain Rock is fresh out of the shower. He's clothed, don't worry. He is crying over his broken guitar. This big mountain of a man. This big bear-like guitar player. Looks like he could be part of Pantera. Lamenting his broken axe. And then he says in a growl, now it's personal. I will deal with you.
Wow. You'll be pleased to know that the Man Mountain Rock Bob Backlund feud, there's a couple of lines about it in The Observer.
All right.
Which Dave says, their first match on the 10th of June at Madison Square Garden was described... as one of the worst matches in the history of Western civilization. They went 10 minutes without even locking up.
So, high praise then.
Bring it on. Bring on Man Mountain Rock and Bob Backlund. Why not Hidden. Man Mountain Rock and Jarrett?
Yeah, I mean,
that's obvious.
Oh, sure. But alas.
That's what we're doing.
Sadly, this is Man Mountain Rock's second most potent feud of the year behind the one he had with the Click. Although we won't see that one.
I know which one made him cry more.
We'll just hear about it. So next week, we have Sid the Tonka versus the Head Shrinkers, and what could be a fun match. And it's asked, can this match reestablish the Head Shrinkers among the tag team elite? That's a thing? In 95, that's a thing?
Apparently not.
Putting on matching jean shorts, and you're already part of the tag team elite. Now we come to our main event. Is Luger going to be our hero when he faces Yokozuna?
Well, you know what? He comes close.
Well, he choked at SummerSlam. He choked at WrestleMania. Now he's on Raw in Frog Neck, Ohio. Facing Yokozuna for a spot in the prestigious King of the Ring tournament. So this is like, if you've seen the Major League movies, the first two take place in the Major Leagues. The third one's called Back to the Minors. It's about a minor league team. That's what this is like. It's not as fun.
No, it's not as fun.
Although I will say this was a better match than the one they had at Mania 10. But then again, so was the match with Mike Corey and John Crystal wearing short shorts. So Yoko is now 641. That's a lot of rice.
That is. Was that all just from the rice he ate backstage?
That's what I'm thinking. Yeah, quick. Hopefully the rice wasn't tainted in any way. Because one time at my old job, we had to throw out bags of basmati rice that had dead mice in it.
Oh, what?
Yeah.
Jeez.
I asked my boss, could we just write the whole pallet of them off? He says, no, we're trying to save the good ones. So can you just sift through?
Oh, my.
And two other guys.
Do you know what? The fact that you watched Techno Team 2000 and still went, what am I doing with my life? Despite the fact that in a previous job, you had to sift through basmati rice to find dead rats. You're still going...
Not rats, mice. There's a fundamental difference.
Oh, okay. I apologize to the rat community that I've besmirched.
But, you know, it's... I draw a very fine line. We got to wear gloves. It was okay.
Oh, that's fine. Well, for the Techno Team 2000 match.
Something just has to be handled with tongs.
Oh, God. Delicious.
There's about 30 bags in all, I think. The others were fine. We put them back on the shelf. This was years ago. Anyway, speaking of bad, we learned that Razor Ramon has bad ribs because of what happened in the earlier report about getting hurt in the ladder match. So his status for King of the Ring is in question.
They can't afford to lose any more people. They really can't.
Don't worry. We have some incoming talent here. Lex Luger's flag bearer.
Okay.
Do you know who this man is?
No. Go on.
Well, he's introduced as a wrestler named Scotty Antle, who just so happens, just like Lex Luger in 3 months' time, he will be appearing on Monday Nitro. And making a big splash in the early days of the show because he is American Males member Scotty Riggs.
Oh my God, it's Scotty Riggs! Bloody hell! I had no idea.
American Males.
And on the line to talk about it is Scotty Riggs. No, he's not really.
I wish. Scotty Riggs was on Monday Night Raw in 95.
That is amazing. That is bloody amazing.
For just some reason, he was there, and they didn't sign him.
Because of reasons.
So Luger and Yoko kill a little bit of time by flag waving. Yoko waves his flag, and then Luger waves his. It's a big to-do over the flags. Starts the way it was. Luger gets the early strikes. Yoko slams him, but misses the big ensuing elbow drop. Yoga takes a big funny bump to the floor through the middle ropes the way he always does, where he just sinks like a stone immediately. And they point out that this is how he lost SummerSlam 93. But this time, Luger would get the rewards of winning via countout, because when by countout, you go to the tournament. So Cornette, Yoga's out. Cornette fans him with the racket, which is kind of funny.
Yeah, I like that. I enjoy it. Do you know what? This actually shapes up to be one of the better matches that they've had.
I don't know about that.
Really? I mean, the bar's low, right? I'm looking at it based
on... It's better than the Mania match.
Better than the Mania match. I kind of feel like it might be a bit better than the SummerSlam match.
The SummerSlam match was good, though. It just had a shit ending.
But this had... I suppose this has a shit ending as well.
Well, yeah,
but... It was something about the pace of this one I quite liked.
Well, it was quicker because it was a TV match.
Mm.
So, Luger gets easily distracted by Fuji the way McIntyre got distracted by MVP. So, Yoko attacks. Vince gets mad at Yoko for throwing strikes. Stop it, referee! He's just punching him while he's down. That's literally all he's doing. So, Riggs waves a flag to try and wake Yoko up. Apparently, that works because Yoko misses the ensuing avalanche. We get this big long spiral where Luger throws strikes at Yoko, try and knock him down. Shoulder blocks, axe handles, clotheslines. Finally, a second rip lariat knocks Yoko off his feet. But then we get the best part of the match. Mr. Fuji, who at this point, I think is like 96 years old, shambles over to where Scotty Riggs is.
Shambles.
I can't believe him. I haven't watched this. Walks up to the future WCW World Tag Team Champion. In 3 months, he'll be beating Harlem Heat along with Buff Bagwell. Walks up to Riggs, chops him in the neck like he's Austin Powers, and steals the American flag.
That was incredible. Fuji busted out the chop.
Riggs bumped off one chop. No wonder Bischoff hired him. Like, he can bump. Let's get him. We have morons here with no talent. Well, he could sell for them too.
Yeah. We need somebody in this promotion full of old guys who can bounce around a bit. Come on in, Scotty.
So then Luger slugs Cornette and he grabs the flag from Fuji. But meanwhile, Yoko posts him in against the big ring post on the floor. Hence why he posted him. Hits the big chunky leg drop. Luger's out. Yoko crawls in on 7. Had a hard time doing that, but he got in. He gets in. Yoko wins by count out. Bring it back to square one with poetic justice.
They are swapping count out victories over one another.
Your winner, as a result of stupidity, Yokozuna, for the third time.
Who will win the third encounter when countouts are off? Find out down never again.
Stupidity really is Luger's Achilles heel.
Would this be Luger's sort of last big match on television for WWF?
I'd say so.
Because we are, and I know that Nitro is not quite here yet. Or WCW head-to-head, as it's apparently known this week. We're not there yet, but we aren't far off from Luger sort of going quietly into the night for the WWF.
Hitting the ejector seat.
Mm-hmm.
We're getting very close. He has one more big pay-per-view match, well, significant pay-per-view match, but then, yeah, he sort of recedes into the darkness.
Mm-hmm.
So next week, we have Taker in action, Shawn as well. God, really busting for that rating. And Headshrinkers versus Tatanka and Sid. Meanwhile, we finally get Lawler's training footage at long last. And by training footage, we mean he's walking around barefoot in a horse stable, stepping into all the excrement.
There's a weird fetishness about the last couple of weeks on Raw.
Yes. Someone behind the scenes maybe enjoying this a little bit too much.
Yeah, like Snitsky's running the show or something.
What if Snitsky and Rikishi formed the tag team?
foot and ass disease.
Boots to asses.
Boots, feet to asses. Oh, no. It'd be called niche pornography. That'd be the name of their team.
Endangered feet season.
No, it's got a third meaning that I don't want to think about. Oh, Christ.
It wasn't my shirt.
It wasn't my foot. I feel sick.
Let me have my dream team here.
Mate, that dream is all yours. Who am I to interfere with your dream, my friend? That dream is all yours.
I wrote without a trace of irony. Vince doesn't think scatological humor is funny. Is this the real Vince?
Oh, there's one line from the Yoko Luger match that I wanted to get in that they said on commentary, which is an example of Vince talking but not paying attention.
Yokozuna gets any bigger, you can paint WWF on his side, fly him over these buildings. That might be a bit difficult.
Like it was a legit request.
So Lawler, Alvarez, and Vince Meltzer here. I wish Meltzer done commentary with Monsoon. They're literally hanging from the rafters. Well, not literally hanging from them, because that'd be very hard.
Right in the bread basket. Well, it's not a bread basket.
After this little bit where Lawler gets his little piggies covered in turdies, we get footage from over the weekend of Lawler facing Aldo Montoya. As I realize that these are two men that feud with Tommy Dreamer eventually.
Lucky Tommy.
Well, we've seen him eat worse in vignettes.
Oh, God.
Lawler wins with a pile driver and then pulls out his dirty foot and makes Montoya kiss it. And they keep showing the replay over and over again because Lawler's taking delight in it. And that's our show for the week.
Can I assume that... All right, so they really push Lawler and his weird foot fetish and Bret Hart this week. Uh-huh. And here's my theory, right? Diesel is injured. And they say he'll be fine for King of the Ring. But there's a concern that he won't be full 100%. And obviously you've got a lot of other injuries within the company. Do you think the WWF are pushing this Lawler-Bret thing so heavily as a sort of main event contingency?
It's possible, but I think it's the one angle on the show that has like a real revenge plot to it. They bring up the elbow thing, A, to explain why Diesel's not appearing on house shows, so you have a cover for that.
Mm-hmm.
And B, to give him something to fight back from, because Sid's this big scary monster who busted his arm. Bret, meanwhile, has a more tangible revenge plot. Lawler embarrassed him on Mother's Day after having made a vow to his mom that he'd win both his matches. Mm. Bret wants to kill Lawler. Lawler is antagonizing him to a high degree because Lawler is great at that. So you want to see Bret make this guy pay and pay in grand fashion.
Yeah, that makes sense. That's in keeping.
So I think it's just a more tangible B plot to the show. I think these are going to work no matter what, no matter how bad his arm is, because Bam Bam can just do most of the heavy lifting. It is what it is.
Mm-hmm.
Diesel Sid's kind of uninteresting. Bret Lawler, it's a little goofy, but Bret and Lawler can make it work.
And they will, to some extent. and all our fetishists will be delighted by the news.
I gotta say, stepping in shit really is a metaphor for this show.
It truly is. It was one of them. On a lighter note to end on, I received a package over the weekend.
you say lighter.
I have in my possession WWF Slam Jam the cassette. It is a single release cassette. It is in mint condition, and I don't want to keep it. I think somebody else should be poisoned with this chalice. So,
but they're like the Curse of Thorn from Halloween 6. Just pass it on.
So next week, here on the Classic Raw review, I will tell you how you can get your hands on this very cassette, if you are so inclined. We have a competition next week that I'm excited to share with you.
And the loser will get this cassette.
Whoever comes bottom is going to get the cassette.
Yep, Tom showed me the reaction of his lady, the lovely Alex, to his purchase of this, and he showed it to her. and her befuddlement. I as a wrestling fan at the time, I wouldn't have really gotten it, but today I fully understand it.
Splicey, splicey, Tom, put the reaction in.
What the fuck is this? Slam Jam. If only I had a cassette player to play it on. Tom, what is this?
Well, look, if you don't want it...
Hello, I just wanted to say a massive thank you for your order. You're welcome. You may like to know that the profits made help to look after quite a large menagerie of rescued and rehomed animals.
Ah!
A dog, three cats, three horses, multiple ex-battery hens, and several ducks. I hope that shopping with me has been a happy experience and that you will feel compelled to leave a positive five-star review.
Definitely.
If there are any problems, please let me know so I can sort it out for you. My number one goal is your satisfaction, and I will do everything I can to resolve any issue. Again, thank you. You're welcome, person I don't know.
Well, look, if you don't want it, I know someone
fine.
Who does. No, you don't want
it's
it.
Fine.
You don't want
no,
it.
I want
you,
this.
You hate it.
I want this. I'm all for a cassette. I don't have a cassette player, but I'm sure that the WWF Superstar Slam Jam cassette.
Simon Cowell produced that.
Are you serious?
I'm serious.
Explain to the trousers.
Stock Aitken and Waterman, and Simon Cowell produced it.
Wow.
It's amazing. Piece of history right there. £9, well spent.
I worry about you. It's an instrumental mix on side B.
Excellent. We can use it as a music bed. What a treat. What a treat.
You are so lucky that she finds your neurosis adorable.
I am, aren't I? That could be yours next week, the reaction and the cassette. And until next week, he is at JRH Writing on Twitter. I am at Tom Gamble on Twitter. Together, we are at Cultaholic on Twitter. Don't forget to join us. I love you. Bye. 2000. And see.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
For all the wrestling headlines in just 10 minutes, search Cultaholic Wrestling News on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts from.